If you've been told to pull up your socks, then make sure it's a pair of TNT socks. The TNT shop is now open at TNTRadio.live.
The price of gas is so high.
How high is it?
It would be cheaper to buy cocaine and just run everywhere.
Today's News Talk Radio.
Come on, man.
TNT.
Okay, you are listening to the Steve Hook Show, and now it's the Steve Hook and Brian McLean Show as we welcome Brian Hesher McLean to the air. Hello, brother. How are you, man? Good to see you.
I'm good, Steve. Great to see you, too. Always love doing a Friday here on Today's News Talk with you. And yeah, it's going to be a insane close to the We're going to have a little bit of fun today on the show, and same with the upcoming hour in the Brian McLean Show. It's going to be great. We got a bunch of great guests lined up, and very pleased to be here with you on this beautiful Friday, my friend.
Yeah, me too. And we do have a big show for sure. I mean, Rich Rubino is going to be joining us, and then it's kind of become a regular Friday spot for Andrew Langer, hasn't it? Yeah. We always love to get Andrew in the mix as well. So that'll be fun. There's an awful lot to talk about, that's for sure. And yeah. And I'm with you, man. I love Fridays. God knows I love Fridays.
TGIF, my friend, TGIF. And listen to this one. A judge orders a new primary election after seeing video showing possible ballot stuffing. I'm sure
we
you
talked
noticed
about it. One. I talked yeah. about it. It's crazy.
It is. It's absolutely crazy. So
that's the Connecticut story.
Yeah. William Clark. So big shout out there. I love to see this. This shows, you know, people are so blackpilled on voting, myself included. So it's nice to see it may not part the seas. Yeah,
it may happen.
It's something, you know, it's a nod that people in high places have noticed what's going on. And
yeah. You know what I find so amazing about that story? The general election is going to happen. And then judge is like, well, after the general, we'll have to redo the primary. It's like, how does that work? So it's like, I imagine if the won the primary originally under what is now considered fraudulent circumstances, if he does manage to win, and I would like to think the people of Connecticut have enough sense to know that they should not vote for him. After all, he just got out of prison for fraud. But I guess it would immediately go to appeal. I don't know how that would work, but God, it's weird. But voter fraud really never happens. Yeah, voter fraud never happens, we're told.
Of course not. No. We can't have that. It never happens if the evidence never gets to a judge. Secretaries of state, DAs, activist lawyers, activist judges, we're talking to you. We're talking to you.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. What else you got in the bag of tricks there?
Well, I don't know if you covered this one or not yet, but I noticed kind of going along with what we spoke with Larry Elder about with our black voters here in the United States, black voters in Milwaukee are feeling uninspired and potentially not motivated to vote for President Biden in advance of 2024, according to a dreaded and dubious CNN report on Friday. But even coming out of CNN having to admit that there's a lot of African-Americans walking away in places like Milwaukee, that's you know, something that kind of underlines what the conversation we had with Larry and multiple other conversations we've had, not just with black people, but also Latinos and many other creeds here in the United States.
Yeah, well, you know, I tell you, man, you live by the sword of identity politics, and oftentimes you die by the sword of identity politics. It is not just the black vote and the Latino vote. Now it's the Arab American vote is lashing out. Now, that doesn't mean that they're going to rush to Trump's side. In fact, they probably won't, but they probably won't show up at the polls either. So this is just, I mean, you know, you balkanize a nation like this, and you put them in groups and say, "Oh, I'm going to get the gay vote. I'm going to get the trans vote," which is the newest block they've come up with. And then all of a sudden, it's like you better watch where you step, because who was it who said, you know, if you tell the lie, you know, I think it was Mark Twain that said, if you tell the truth, you never have to worry about, tripping. I forget the exact quote, but if you tell the truth, you don't have to remember so much. He has promised so much to so many people, and what has he done for Black America? What has he done?
Insult them just like the rest of us. And, you know, like, I think there is that live by the sword, die by the sword sort of feeling, especially for younger people who know something's wrong in the world and they latch on to what they think is the underdog, no matter what that is. But as you get older, you realize you're not fighting and dying by the sword, because you will get cannibalized by that sword over and over again, to the point where you realize you're the man sitting on the laying on the table under the pit in the pendulum. And this pendulum swings right to left at the behest of those that swing it, and it is a very sharp, and it will gut you.
Yeah, very well said. You've painted an allegorical picture, and I like it, and it's true. It's true. That's the real thing. And what has he done for Black America? Well, he's opened the southern border wide open, so he's depressed wage increases, he's the inflation's through the roof. Oh man, I would hate to be running the Biden campaign. That's why they're trying to put Trump in prison. I don't know if you heard me chatting with Liz Harrington, but that's kind of this consensus, is they're trying to get rid of Trump because they've got to. It's crazy.
They absolutely are. And you can see how this would anger a lot of our African Americans, because, you know, they've experienced both sides of this pendulum now, right? We came in with the culture warfare and we destroyed their family. We came in with the welfare state. We destroyed their family. Same with real estate scams, CIA involvement in crack and cocaine. And then along comes Joe Biden and Kamala Harris back in the day, in the late 80s and early 90s. And they both heavily victimized the Black population with mandatory minimums, stop and frisk, all this stuff. That was back when Joe used to say things like, I won't have my kids growing up in a racial jungle. And now they're both supposed to be these lighthearted, fluffy, we like school buses and people that smoke weed and gay people and la, la, la. Are you kidding me? I mean, that's just a perfect example of the pendulum swinging. And now they don't even arrest Black people in places like Los Angeles, even if they're violent felons and caught with an illegal weapon. And if they do arrest them, no bail, you're free, good to go. Yeah. So, I mean, there's that pendulum again. When it's useful to them, watch out. Yeah. Watch out.
It's crazy. That's why when we talked to Larry last week, or not last week, earlier this week, and he was saying that Black females tend to like Kamala Harris. Now, interestingly, he couldn't say that about Black males, because Black males, especially in California, when she was DA, she locked up a lot of them. And Joe Biden, of course, Joe Biden pushed that. Basically ended up roping in a whole bunch of Black Americans for arrest and prosecution. And he's the one that pushed that reform, quote unquote reform. So I don't know. I think they're waking up. The scales are falling from a lot of people's eyes anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And we've got an update coming on that story that we covered yesterday morning with our man Ruckus momentarily here. Before Ruckus joins us, though, you know we never go home at TNT Radio, and we're committed to bringing you our take on the biggest topics of our time. We are broadcasting live right now, and we are live 24/7 online globally. No matter what, we got you covered on TNT Radio.
The news and talk you need.
It's more than just opinions, it's facts.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Well, so yesterday we talked about Eric Adams, one of his campaign higher ups. I forget if it was the manager or not, but here we go. We got an update here. Reportedly, New York City Democratic Mayor Eric Adams' campaign is currently under investigation after allegedly receiving illegal foreign donations. There we go, Steve. It wasn't just talking smack, perhaps. Illegal foreign donations are at play, perhaps, here. Here with the story, joining us now is TNT Radio producer Adam Clark. Ruckus, what's going on here? Give us the update. We're so curious yesterday.
Yeah.
This is like an alarming trend happening with Democratic politicians. Have you noticed?
Yes.
Just saying, this is like the Bob Menendez special. Anyways, so yes, this is crazy. The federal government is conducting a broad corruption probe into the 2021 campaign of New York City Mayor Eric Adams. The focus, determining if his campaign plotted with the Turkish government to bypass campaign laws and funnel foreign cash into the campaign through the use of straw donors, that is, through the names of other people or entities who may otherwise legally make contributions. Thursday morning brought the jarring first public indicator of the investigation as federal agents raided the home of Brianna Suggs, the principal fundraiser of the 2021 campaign. The New York Times, which obtained a copy of the FBI's search warrant and broke the news of the focus on Turkey, reports that agents seized phones, computers, papers, and binders. Adams hasn't been accused of any illegal conduct. Not yet, anyhow. At the time of the raid, Adams was in Washington, D.C. for several meetings with senior White House officials, federal legislators, and others. When he learned about the raid on his fundraiser's home, he canceled them all and rushed back to New York. Quote, "I hold my campaign to the highest ethical standards." That's what Adams said at an event on Thursday night. Quote, "Any inquiry that is done, we are going to fully participate and make sure that it is done correctly. I have not been contacted by anyone from law enforcement agency, and that's why I came back from D.C. to be here, to be on the ground and look at this inquiry as it was made," end quote. Among the documents sought by investigators were those relating to Bay Atlantic University. The Times describes it as a, quote, "tiny Turkish-owned institution that opened in Washington, D.C. in 2014. In 2015, Adams visited his sister school, its sister school in Turkey. Okay. In addition to Suggs, who is just 25 years old, the investigation also involves a Brooklyn construction company, KSK Construction Group, which specializes in luxury New York City condo projects. It's not clear what role the company may have allegedly played in funneling money from the Turkish government. Further, there's been no reporting on Turkey's potential motive for securing his election. The federal probe is not the first criminal inquiry into Adams' campaign. Manhattan DA Alvin Bragg indicted six people in July, charging them with conspiring to funnel illegal foreign money into the campaign's coffers. On top of that, Adams' former senior advisor was indicted by Bragg on 16 felony charges, among them accusations of taking bribes. Adams is up for re-election in 2024. Not anymore. Oh, sorry. And the swarm of investigations is chumming the waters for challengers who sense growing vulnerability. One would be Republican Curtis Sliwa. Sorry. Sliwa. Thank you. Had already announced his intent to take on Adams again. Politico asked him about his 2025 plans in light of the Thursday's federal raid, to which Silva said, quote, "he may be in the big house by then, not the White House like he hoped for," end quote. That's pretty funny. What do you guys think?
I just, Ruckus, we talked about it yesterday when you brought the story about Suggs saying, gee, I wonder if this might be reaching into Eric Adams' own. I wonder if he's going to get in the news here soon enough with this, the legal jeopardy. And God, less than 24 hours later, here we are. Curtis Sliwa, by the way, is the founder of the Guardian Angels. So he's the guy that you see. You guys live out west, but here on the East Coast, we see him a lot. And he ran a decent campaign, but he's just got this real New York vibe. And real New York attitude. Hey, we're going to get up the subways. We're going to keep them clean, yo. That kind of stuff. And I just don't think it played. And of course, Adams had the police background and all that, but this could change everything. You said that he went to Turkey personally? Eric Adams went to.
That's the part that has me a little bit confused. They're not saying much about the Turkey factor here. And last I checked, I mean, I know relationships with Turkey are a little wobbly sometimes, but I mean, overall, we invite Turkish military into our military schools. I mean, they're essentially a military ally. They're, you know, they're not part of the OSCANs.
Part of NATO.
Yeah, exactly. So it's that's very interesting because, you know, because of that, it kind of says that this, to me, it indicates that there's some sort of internal, probably internal to the Democrat Party, to the DNC swamp nature. that he's somehow involved in, because I don't know why the Biden FBI and or DOJ would be going after Eric Adams any more than they would be going after like Karen Bass or, you know, one of these other people that have been instrumental in helping them and allowing them to carry out a lot of their, you know, unconstitutional goings on at the federal level. So there's something kind of strange going on here, and it kind of smacks to me of like an internal power struggle.
Yeah, maybe a little retribution, because Adams did speak out and rather forcefully about the immigration issue that has now landed on Manhattan's front doorstep. We know all about the Roosevelt Hotel and all of that. And he spoke out and he was very adamant about it and saying the president needs to do more. Well, he did do more. He picked up the phone and he called DOJ and he said, have that son of a bitch arrested. Sounds like
could be. I mean, the other thing that could be maybe at play here that is just game theory of mine, but maybe this could be some sort of paving the way for clearing the decks if Biden is not actually the selection for 2024. They may have to shuffle around some mayors that might be a little more appropriate for whatever Biden's replacement might be. But, you know, that's kind of deep down in the weeds. So I'll yield that one right there. Just throwing it out there. Ruckus, anything else you want to throw out about this?
Well, since he asked, there is something about as part of the raid on Suggs' home in Crown Heights. But I don't know who they're talking about, but they sought financial records of the campaign. And it says here travel records to and from Turkey. So at some point, somebody as part of the campaign did go to and from Turkey. So there you go.
Exactly. Right. So illegal foreign campaign money. That's what this case is all about.
Yeah. And going to Turkey doesn't necessarily mean you're meeting with a Turkish person. People from all over the Middle East have access to Turkey. So there's a lot of question marks there. Very interesting. Thanks, Ruckus. We'll have a great weekend, Ruckus, and a great rest of the day here. Live 24/7 right here, TNT Radio.
TNT Radio's David McBride and Dr. Robert Brennan.
You want to start with Israel and Hamas?
Let's start there.
Hamas is actually about 2 years ago stopped attacking Israel. They were still digging tunnels. They were still preparing, but that's another issue. I'll come back to that. Now, Israel was fooled by this and improved the number of day workers who could come into Israel and work from 17,000 to 20,000. So there's 3,000 more people from Gaza can have a job, get paid, take money back, and look after their families. This is good stuff. I mean, we're actually turning these people around into civilized beings. But they also, Hamas, of course, had to convince its own sponsors that, or apparently seemed to convince its own sponsors that it was still a militant arm. So they used to actually carry out minor exercises which would all be spied upon by the Israelis, either through drones or spy satellites or people on the ground or whatever. But they actually managed to watch these people carrying out these minor exercises, but never big groups. They were always fairly small groups. Again, look at the capabilities. They can only put 30 people in a field together, or maybe 40. Well, we could easily take them out. So everyone was lulled into this false sense of security.
McBride and Brennan with David McBride and Dr. Robert Brennan on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
The Light is Britain's far-right conspiracy theory paper spreading hate and vicious lies. No, that's just what the BBC say. The Light is the only national newspaper bringing you the real news and informed opinion on what's really going on today. You can subscribe, order copies, submit articles, and read back issues on our website, thelightpaper.co.uk, and see for yourself why the establishment are so worried about the uncensored truth getting out to people every month. Now they're launching a new service called Wake Up Your Neighbours, where you can get copies delivered to the streets right around you if you don't want to do it yourself. The Light Paper. Not for right. Just right so far. Thelightpaper.co.uk.
TNT.
We're extremely proud of the quality, balanced journalism.
But we are concerned about trouble and trying to be responsible, one-sided news stories plaguing our country.
And this is extremely dangerous to our democracy.
This is extremely dangerous to our democracy.
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 This is today's News Talk and the voice of freedom.
TNT Radio.
That's right. The mass media cartel is dangerous to our republic. Okay, so we're going to talk about the latest polls in Iowa and 2024, Steve. Very much looking forward to this. We've got a great guest joining us, regular over here. And to kick us off, I'll say Ron DeSantis seems to have lost much ground, but there is precedent for a governor who was once the front runner losing ground and then coming back. So a little bit of historical context here might breathe a little bit of wind into the sails of you Ron DeSanctimonious fans out there, or maybe it won't, I don't know. But joining us right now to discuss is independent political analyst Rich Rubino. Rich, it's great to see you. Welcome to the show. Steve and I are very pleased to see you this Friday.
Yes, thank you so much for having me on again.
Absolutely. Yeah, so tell us a little bit about this comeback kid effect here. Where can we look in the rearview mirror to see this potential? And is it even possible for DeSantis?
Yeah. Theoretically, I mean that Ron DeSantis, the expectations are now so low for him. All he has to do is beat Nikki Haley and come in second place. And the next day, the coverage is not going to be able to Donald Trump unless it's very close. I think the general consensus is that Donald Trump is going to win Iowa and win big. So usually when that happens, the focus is on who comes in second place, who's the challenger to him. And you're looking for any precedent of this, and I think back to 1992. That year, the Iowa caucuses were irrelevant because Tom Harkin for the state of Iowa, was from the state of Iowa, so all the candidates basically did not campaign in Iowa, so came down to New Hampshire. And early after Mario Cuomo announced he wasn't going to run, then Arkansas Governor Bill Clinton became the front runner, but then there were issues of his draft status. There's, remember, the Jennifer Flowers issue, and he fell down to the fact that he was in third, fourth, and fifth place. So essentially, he had about 8 days, and he went all over New Hampshire, campaigned, went to every mall, visited just about every place, and then by Election Day, he came in second place to Paul Tsongas, the former senator from Massachusetts, and he lost by 9 points. But next day, the coverage was not so much that Paul Tsongas won. Paul Tsongas had been so far ahead at that time, and he was from a neighboring state, so he should have won. But the fact that Bill Clinton had come back and gotten to about 26%, he actually declared himself the comeback kid. And after that, he went on. He ended up winning in Georgia, South Carolina, the South, which was kind of tailor-made for him, and he ended up winning the nomination. Now, how is this relevant today? Because Ron DeSantis at one point was just about tied with Donald Trump. So theoretically, if he works, and he's basically just like other candidates like Tim Scott, he's basically betting the farm to Bunner in Iowa, but he spends an enormous amount of time there, comes in second place, beats Nikki Haley, beats the other candidates for second place. He's going to have a big rally in Iowa, and he can definitely declare himself, not the comeback kid directly, but something like that, the comeback DeSantis, something more creative, maybe give himself a nickname. And the next day, the coverage is going to be, how did Ron DeSantis fall so far, then come back? And then theoretically, there would be a movement in the Republican Party that Ron DeSantis would be the main challenger to Donald Trump. And people would say, why doesn't everybody else just drop out, something to that effect? So that's kind of the precedent, I think.
I wonder, Rich, hey, Steve Hook.
Hi, Steve.
You know, I was just talking with Liz Harrington last hour. Yep. And she made mention of the fact that DeSantis went on MSNBC. I think it was Morning Schmo Show, and said, basically, look, if Donald Trump is convicted of a federal crime, he should be removed from the ballot. Well, I'm sorry, but I don't know that that's going to play well in the primary, because Donald Trump has a built-in base that Paul Tsongas never had. And by the way, he also wasn't 40 points up on Clinton either. So is that going to come into play as much? I think that a lot of people would be turned off by DeSantis just for suggesting that I'm in the race hoping that he gets arrested, is what it sounded like.
Well, it all depends on what constituency, and you're right. If he wants to go for the constituency Chris Christie and Asa Hutchinson are going for, basically never Trump, I'm not going to vote for Donald Trump, going after Donald Trump, he can do that. But that, as we've seen so far, that constituency is not nearly as big as those who either like Donald Trump or those who like Donald Trump's personal policies, but don't necessarily like him personally. And those are the ones that Ron DeSantis, I think, is trying to go for. If he basically makes that will be his argument. He'll say Donald Trump has been convicted. I think what he's hoping for that is that then if Donald Trump, theoretically, let's say Donald Trump is convicted or during the trial, he's hoping there'll be some trepidation on the part of some Republican voters that they will say, do we really want to go through this during the election cycle? Do we really want to have this baggage? Wouldn't we want somebody who would be more of a clean slate? And that is where Ron DeSantis would essentially come in and say something to the effect of, basically, I agree with Donald Trump on most policies, but I would not have that type of baggage. I think that's kind of the strategy. But my guess is between now and the Iowa caucuses, he's going to try just about everything. He's probably just going to about move into Iowa. We saw he also said today that if Donald Trump were to show up for the next debate, he would literally wear a boot on his head. Now, obviously, he's joking about that. That's the Vernon Supreme strategy, the presidential candidate that wears a boot in his head. But if I were Donald Trump, just to see that happen, I would say, you know what? All right, I'm going to go to the debate. And then you have Ron DeSantis showing in the debate, having to wear a boot in his head, which I think would be very funny. But
yeah, I don't know. I have a feeling that the nickname for DeSantis, I'm reminded of the Talladega Nights movie where Ricky Bobby says, coming in second is what is it? What is the quote? Has something like second
first,
is first.
You're last.
Yeah, if you ain't first, you're last. Yeah, that's it. So, you know, second place is just the first loser.
But in Iowa, the way it's like, there's history for this too. Both Iowa and New Hampshire, the same thing. Gary Hart against Walter Mondale. Walter Mondale, if you look at the sheer numbers, he beat him by about 25 points. But because Gary Hart came in second place, people focused on this guy's going to be the challenger to Walter Mondale. Eventually, it's going to become a one-on-one race, and all the people who are against Walter Mondale, who wanted somebody else, they're all going to kind of gravitate toward Gary Hart. That's the strategy I think DeSantis is thinking, and that certainly was a strategy that worked for Bill Clinton. He doesn't have to win because the expectations are so high for Donald Trump right now. Donald Trump can only lose, and by losing, I mean if Donald Trump wins by 10 points in Iowa, the next day people are going to be saying, why didn't Donald Trump win by 20 points? Why didn't he win by 30 points? Why didn't he win by 40 points? Though if he does win by 30 or 40 points, then he goes to New Hampshire. And I think essentially a lot of the donors who are giving to other candidates would either go to Donald Trump or would sit on the sidelines here and say, well, Donald Trump's going to win this election. But when you're so far ahead at this point, and that's why it's probably a smart strategy for him not to go into debates, because if you do go into debates and every other single candidate attacks you, you can only lose. He realizes that any coverage that he's going to get the next couple days, why isn't Donald Trump here? Was Donald Trump, why isn't he in? Why is he a coward? Why isn't he in the debate? That is going to pale in comparison to the possibility of him actually being in a debate and seeing every single candidate going after him. So when you're that far, when you're that far ahead, you can only lose. And whoever comes in second place is going to get a bounce. And that could also be Nikki Haley, by the way. If Nikki Haley, the fact that she may have peaked too soon is what I'm thinking, because just like in 92, for example, Bob Kerry, remember the senator for Nebraska, he was the person I think a lot of people thought was going to come in number two. And he peaked right when the Jennifer Flowers story began. But then Bill Clinton just outworked Bob Kerry in the state of New Hampshire and ended up coming in second place. And Bob Kerry landed up really kind of going nowhere from that. So in the case of Nikki Haley, the fact that she did peak too early, she now needs to come in second place. If she comes in third place, it's going to be a loss for her. And if she does come in second place, she probably needs to come in second place by about 3 or 4 points just to show that she cements herself as the main alternative to Donald Trump in New Hampshire, South Carolina, and the succeeding primaries.
Wow. Okay. So this coming in second is sort of a big deal. We're going to have to keep an eye on it. I was wondering when we would get to the point, and I really appreciate you breaking that down for us, because now we know what to look for. And I guess second place is the hopeful comeback kid underdog zone, which is not the worst place to be if you're in this large candidate field right now. Okay, Rich, hold the line. We have a headline inbound with today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Now, TNT Radio News.
Show how it's done.
Let's go.
I got news for you.
News. This is James O'Neill with a check of today's headlines. During a press conference in Tel Aviv on Friday, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken urged Israel to do everything in its power to protect civilians caught in the fighting in Gaza and ensure they receive humanitarian aid, while underscoring the country's right to defend itself. Japanese Prime Minister Fumio Kishida announced on Thursday a 17 trillion yen economic package aimed at supporting households and businesses to cope with inflationary pressure.
God, you're amazing. You're a much better listener than my wife. You're always there for me. I think I may be in love.
Where is she?
Well, it's not what it seems. I was talking to...
Who's the tramp I heard you talking to?
That was my Alexa, sweetie.
Well, she sounds like a tramp.
Fall in love with news and talk all over again with your smart device. Just tell it to play.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Okay, this is the Steve Hook and Brian McClain show on TNT Radio, and we're Very happy to have Rich Rubino on with us. Rich, listen, let me ask you, big shakeup in the House. We finally got a speaker. After 3 weeks of kind of screwing around, shooting ourselves in the foot, we finally got what most people in the caucus and I think in the populace, really, kind of like what they've seen out of Mike Johnson so far. How do you think Johnson's doing, and how is this going to affect politicking going forward? Because he seems to be like he wants to perhaps press on with maybe an impeachment going forward. Where's your head with that?
Well, he certainly hit the ground running, which you have to do when you're somebody who had, you know, 1% name recognition. Now all of a sudden he's third in line, second in line to be the president. But in terms of Mike Johnson, I think electorally, and you hear this a lot, it's coming out past statements that Mike Johnson has made before he was in the House or when he was in the House, certainly. The Democrats can do everything they possibly can to make him the boogeyman. And by that, I mean every Republican voted for him, including the 18 members who come from districts that voted for Joe Biden last time and districts that were closely divided. And you saw this, for example, there are four members of the California delegation that all come from districts where Joe Biden won last time that are also Republicans. And as soon as that happened, the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee immediately said these guys voted for somebody who's essentially Jim Jordan in a sport coat. They were able to vilify Jim Jordan. They're going to be able to vilify Mike Johnson as well. The same way, by the way, the Republicans did to Nancy Pelosi. Every Democrat that was trying to make themselves out to be independent-minded, when they ran for re-election, you'd always see a picture of Nancy Pelosi here and, you know, someone like Jared Golden from Maine and say, this person votes with Nancy Pelosi 87% of the time. Make him into a clone. They're able to do that now. And that, I guess, if it was somebody like Tom Emmer, who's more of a blank slate, who was at least somewhat more of an establishment Republican, it might have been harder for them to do that. The strategy I think they're going to repeat more than anything else is 1996 for the Republicans. The Republicans were basically burned because Newt Gingrich was Speaker and the Democrats were successful in vilifying him. And I remember there was a congressman, Peter Blute from Massachusetts, who was trying to portray himself as kind of a moderate Republican, had a relatively moderate voting record. So Jim McGovern, who's still in the Congress now, the ranking member on the House Rules Committee, respectively, ran an advertisement says, you would never vote for Newt. Why would you ever vote for Blute? And I think they're going to try to do this, certainly Johnson. You're going to see in the next election, as much as it's going to be Donald Trump and it's going to be Johnson running in every congressional district, including districts like Omaha, Nebraska, and parts of California, certainly.
Rich, I noticed something interesting when that you said right there. This new YouTube channel popped up in my recommendations, and it was a CNN, like it was CNN plus a couple of extra characters. I don't remember what they were, but it's like it appears to be like a greatest hits, like a Mike Johnson greatest hits, yep. You know, from all of the subcommittees and everything. And like I clicked in, I'm like, oh, cool. It says it's live, but I click in and it's an older one. And I realize what they're doing is they're like cutting up, you know, his positions on the border, his positions on abortion, his positions on all these things. And, you know, any conservative that's watching, it's like, okay, cool, cool, cool. But of course, you know, someone left of center watching it is just going, oh, I hate this. Oh, how dare he? You know what I mean? It's an interesting tactic to set up a channel like that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And certainly technology. And I'll give it for specifically, not only that, but the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, they were ready. As soon as this vote happened, they were ready and they went after the Republican. They're not going to go after a Republican from a district that's Mississippi, Alabama, Louisiana, that's 70% Republican, because people there are going to say, yeah, I like that. But if you go into a district like, and I bring up this district always, there's a district in Nebraska, which represents Omaha and Lincoln, which are relatively liberal areas, and then there's some rural areas, and you run that and against the Republican ad and say, your Republican representative says he's independent-minded, but he voted for this guy, and then you immediately bring up one of those statements from Mike Johnson, that is something that the current congressman, Don Beacon, is going to have to come out and he's going to say something to the effect of, well, I voted for him, but we're two independent, we're two separate people, something like that. But it's essentially what you want in a Speaker of the House, if you're a member of a swing district, is somebody who you cannot go after, somebody who has kind of an innocuous personality. And it's very easy. Now, it's easy for the Democrats to go after him in terms of policy. The problem for Mike Johnson is demeanor-wise. Demeanor-wise, Mike Johnson does not come off, if you listen to him, he comes off more of a college professor than he does this kind of, you know, the Antichrist or a monster. So that's a problem you're going to have. But you do have these statements, and you're gonna, and they're going to be in just about every congressional district, to the point that a lot of swing voters are not going to know who their own congressman is, but they're certainly going to know who Mike Johnson is, and they may even think that Mike Johnson is going to be on the ballot.
Let me ask you this, though, Rich. Is that calculus going to work, given just how horrible Joe Biden is viewed by the majority of the population? I mean, this is a guy that is shedding voters. He's shedding blocks of voters. I was watching today on the news, Arab Americans are starting to turn against him because of what's going on in Israel and Gaza. That's another story for another day, but it certainly does politically count. Hesher and I have recently been talking about how black voters, especially young black males, are turning against Biden. So is this whole thing about going after Mike Johnson because he says he's a man of God or whatever it is they're going to use, is that calculation, is that calculus going to work this time around, you think?
I think it will, because historically it has. And the reason is because the person in the Speaker of the House is usually somebody who comes from predominantly conservative or on the Democratic side. I mean, Nancy Pelosi comes from San Francisco, where there's probably seven conservatives, so she's easy to go after. And when you make that image of, in the Democrats' case, it's somebody on the coast, somebody in the coast, or somebody from California, or somebody from Massachusetts, that's this kind of, you know, that's this chimera, this image of what, right, the people in the middle of the country believe is this elitist liberal. In the Democrats' case, they essentially want to go after somebody who's from the exact opposite, someone who's from a southern state and seen as out of the mainstream. Now, you say, is it a question about Joe Biden? A lot of this, I think, frankly, is not, this election will not necessarily be about Joe Biden as much as it's a referendum. This is very rare. Assuming Donald Trump is the nominee, if he's the actual nominee, a lot of this is going to be a referendum on a former president, because Donald Trump is not somebody that, you know, he's not like Lyndon Johnson, go back on the ranch in Texas and no one ever hears from him. He's somebody that's been in the news every single day, and people still have very much a view of him. I've never met anybody that, if you say the word Donald Trump, says, you know what, I really don't have an opinion of him. People, where they like him or don't like him. I mean, I've never met that person. I do remember there was a poll one time, though, when Donald Trump was running against Hillary Clinton, and they asked, who do you favor? And there was one person in the poll, one person who said, I've never heard of either. And I'm wondering who that person was. So there, I don't think there's a lot of people like that. My guess is it's probably somebody who's playing with a pollster. But if it is somebody that really is that depoliticized, then my guess is they're probably not going to be voting anyway, because they won't know what day of the election is. But I do think that in terms of Mike Johnson, yes, I think that the Democrats will try to portray every Republican in a swing district as Mike Johnson, which I guess is why, when you think about it, when you want a Speaker of the House, just from a purely electoral standpoint, in terms of trying to save your members, I guess for the Democrats, the best possible scenario would be to actually get somebody who represents a swing district from the middle of the country to be Speaker of the House, and for the Republicans to actually get somebody who represents a swing district and somebody who's actually perhaps doesn't have a 100% voting record with their party, with their ideology. Then that makes it harder for the other party to kind of go after. But when you have somebody like a Nancy Pelosi, like a Newt Gingrich, like Michael Johnson, who are seen as partisans, it's very easy to make them into a monster.
Yes. All right. Rich Rubino, we're just about out of time here. We really appreciate your analysis per usual. Thank you for joining us. We'll look forward to your next visit, and have a great weekend, my friend.
Yes, and enjoy the debate this week.
All right. Excellent. Okay. Rich Rubino with Steve Hook and I right here on today's News Talk TNT Radio.
De-weaponizing weather with reality and perspective.
I went back to my high school reunion, and a lot of my classmates were asking me about this offshore wind turbine stuff that was going on off the New Jersey coast, because despite the fact that a lot of them are Democrats, a lot of them did not like the idea that whales were washing up at the beach, didn't like the idea that there were going to be wind turbines in their backyard, and even some of them actually knew it was a fruitless project in the first place. Well, the governor of New Jersey, of course, doesn't think so. And he is very, very upset that the company, and I think they're a private company, and they should be able to make decisions as to what is economically and environmentally viable for them. They decided they're not going to do this, so the governor of New Jersey is coming after them. He's going to review all legal rights and remedies and to take all necessary steps to ensure that this company, Orsted, fully and immediately honors its obligations. What is it with these people? They enforced these mandates during COVID, then claimed they didn't do that. Now you're seeing basically what is political blackmail going on of a company that has decided they don't want to have anything to do with this, and by the way, with good reason. I'll tell you what, this stuff is getting really, really out of hand. When you have a company that can't say, hey, listen, this isn't good for us, and we don't think it's good for the environment, and we don't think it's good economically, and then the governor of that state tries to force them into doing something, things are out of control. And that's the way these people work. This is TNT Climate and Weather Watchdog meteorologist Joe Bastardi asking you to enjoy the weather. It's the only weather you got.
Hi, I'm Smokey Bear, and I made an assistant to help you out, because only you can prevent wildfires.
Hey, Assistant Smokey Bear, call me Papa Bear, because I'm grilling up dinner. Do you get it?
Yes, good job.
So, what should I do with all these coals?
Don't just toss them out. Put them in a metal container, because those embers can start a wildfire.
I understand. The stakes are high.
Ha, 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 ha.
See, Smokey thinks I'm funny.
To follow us on Twitter, click the link on our site.
You followed me. I feel all warm and fuzzy.
Or search on Twitter.
TNT Radio Live.
TNT Radio.
All right. You're listening to the Steve Hook and Brian McClain Show on TNT Radio. And we're happy to welcome our next guest. Seems to be kind of a regular now, and we're very happy to welcome back Andrew Langer. Andrew, of course, is the director for the Center of Regulatory Freedom at the CPAC Foundation. Andrew, happy Friday. It's great to see you again. How are you, brother?
I'm good, Jensen. Yeah, I was excited to get the request and sum up the week with all of you.
Yeah, we love it, too.
Yeah, we love it. We always love having you on, Andrew. So what's thanks. Top of your radar as we go into the weekend here? Because you know how it is on Mondays. We'll be scrambling to catch up with what happened between now and then.
Yeah, isn't that the truth? I mean, listen, the big thing on my radar screen is what's going on with anti-Semitism around the country. The Biden administration's lack of a reaction, in fact, reacting by saying that we need to deal with Islamophobia. If there's never been a greater indication that this administration is out to lunch, it was certainly their ham-handed response over the last couple of days to the reports that are coming out about anti-Semitic activity on college campuses and elsewhere.
Yeah, and I noticed that I was watching a report today. I believe it was Fox News. It could have been one of the others because I just kind of flipped back and forth between all of them. But I suspect it wasn't on a liberal network. And it was basically talking about how Generation Z and the younger generations get most of their news via social media, i.e. Right. TikTok. And they've noticed that the TikTok algorithm is set in such a way that it promotes anti-Semitism. For every one report that's pro-Israel, you get 10 that are pro, well, for lack of a better term, Hamas. And it's having a direct effect on college campuses. I don't know if you saw the video of that kid that was surrounded.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Abhorrent to see on Harvard, at Harvard.
It's not surprising to me, Steve. I mean, you know, here's what I come back to. And it's interesting we talk about TikTok here, because I think I've laid out with you guys the role that the Russians have played over many, many years in trying to tear at the fabric of American society and manipulating us into hating each other and fomenting a lot of dissent and chaos. And this is the end result. In fact, I did a TV appearance today where I talked a little bit about that. What I don't think we have talked about, at least not recently, is the role that China has played in that regard, right? Because it's not just TikTok, but China has spent years burrowing onto college campuses. They have this network of what they call the Confucian or Confucius Institutes that are, again, supposed to create a pro-Chinese narrative on these campuses. But again, it's all about propagandizing and manipulation. There are nations who want to see Americans turned against each other and have for decades wanted to see Americans turned against each other. On this TV appearance that I did today, guys, I had someone who actually tried to lay the blame for this leftist anti-Semitism on Donald Trump. And I said, wait a minute. None of the folks who are ripping down posters in New York City or dealing with what's going on at Harvard, these are not Donald Trump supporters. These are not MAGAites. These are folks who have been in leftist institutions or been taught by leftist institutions who have for many, many years gone down this road of doing what they can to tear at the very fabric of American society. Now, we could talk about dumb things that Donald Trump has said. But, you know, we can also talk about things that the Barack Obama administration did to foment these things. We can anyway, we can go back to many, many things that have happened over the last 50 years.
Yeah. Yeah. No kidding. And we've definitely it did seem, and I think Hesher would agree, it did seem that, well, when a President Obama comes into office and says we're going to fundamentally change America, that kind of says it all right there for those sure. paying attention. But the divisiveness with which we view, I mean, it could be anything really these days seems to divide the nation. And I think you're right. I think China is playing into that. And God knows, I'm sure China sets these algorithms for TikTok. No, I mean, 100%. Don't they? Yeah.
Right. So, and that's exactly it. It gets very pernicious down the road, right? We can talk about stovepiping and the problems of echo chambers on social media. But if the algorithms themselves are being manipulated or being used to manipulate people into thinking a certain way, now listen, again, we can wear our tinfoil hats. We could talk about self-radicalization. I'm not suggesting that there is any sort of cult programming mentality at work here. But it wouldn't surprise me down the road if I'm sorry. Let me take a full step backwards, Steve and Brian, for a minute on this. One of the things that I learned and, you know, I took a class on the history of the CIA when I was in college. I was an international relations major. And one of the things that our guy taught us, who was a former CIA case officer, is that, you know, folks who are out in the field doing intelligence work and who are doing the case officer work, which is managing intelligence assets abroad, that one of the things that they are taught is to engage in what is called NLP, neuro-linguistic programming. And I used to joke about this. So essentially, you're training our CIA is training people to be used car salesmen. But the reality is that intelligence agencies all around the world use neurolinguistic programming to push people in particular directions, to manipulate them to believe certain things and act in certain ways. So it wouldn't surprise me if the Chinese government was not using the algorithms of TikTok to manipulate America's young people into thinking certain things about the way the world works.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the scary part, because when you look at TikTok, it's arguably only slightly worse than Instagram, which is run right here out of California. It may be exactly the same. I would argue they basically stole their algorithm and maybe tweaked it just ever so slightly. And then, you know, you brought up neurolinguistic programming and the CIA, and that makes me think of Project Mockingbird. Sure. And what we learned in Project Mockingbird, what we learned in Twitter files, you know, and now everybody thinks Twitter 2.0 is just, you know, hands washed. It's all cool. Elon's got it. Free speech. Onward we go. And I'm not really buying that one, because these things all work hand in glove with not just, you know, a single administration in this country, but the Pentagon, the Davos crowd, right, the Fortune 500. And I'll back you up, Andrew, and say, there absolutely is cult programming going on in these feedback loops that we're mentioning here.
Well, let's add to this now the fact that the administration a week ago yesterday, dropped their new proposal on net neutrality. Remember that you know, the last time they dropped net neutrality at the FCC, it was, well, we need to make sure that platforms are not moderating content and censoring content. Well, obviously, that's gone out the window with the left. This really is a reintroduction of the concept of the internet kill switch. At the same time, they want to enforce sort of rate regulation on consumers. But yeah, the reality is, once again, what they're trying to do is give enormous power to government bureaucrats over the operation of the internet. And we need to be pushing back on this. I know we're working on our comments now, and others are working on theirs. I don't think it'll stand up in court, but nevertheless, this is where the battle is.
Yeah. I don't think it's, listen, the fact of the matter is, if you are a teen living in Beijing, you're not getting this kind of crap fed to you. And that right there, you know, that right there is the proof as far as I'm concerned. If you're a teen in Beijing and you're watching TikTok videos, you're solving calculus problems, or you're talking about the wonders of ancient China. That's what they're teaching you. And they teach these kids how proud they should be of China. On the other hand, if you're a teenager watching it in, Poughkeepsie, you're taught that your country sucks. It's raised on racism. It's just, I mean, it's so obvious to those paying attention, but those paying attention isn't their, that's not their target audience, is it?
And you're dished out softcore pornography too. They intermingle all that horrible political identity stuff with, you can barely call it softcore pornography. It's sitting there in any red-blooded male teenager and probably preteen's feed if you give a poor preteen child a phone, which I don't recommend.
Well, this is the question that was asked by a lefty on this TV show that I did today, which is about where did this come from? Somebody, a columnist for the Washington Post, raised the question of, you know, well, when did this happen? There was a moment people thought racism was going to be dead in a generation. And I pointed out that starting in about 1984, 1985, the tenor of the left with regards to racism changed. Now, we can talk about how much of that was being funded by the then Soviet Union. Remember that Nikita Khrushchev said, "We will be at your funeral." This is part of what he was talking about. But essentially, it became about tearing at the fabric of who we are, the history of America. We're no longer allowed to say that America is the greatest nation on earth. We're no longer to have this common heritage of the Revolutionary War and the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. All of those are bad things because half the founding fathers were slaveholders, blah, 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 blah. And the end result of 40 years of that, almost 40 years of that, is that we have no common ground in America. We are easily manipulated. Then we get people tearing down posters on the streets of New York. And the useful fools, you know, people of Jewish descent marching on behalf of Gaza or marching on behalf of Hamas, on the Brooklyn Bridge, which is just insane.
Yeah. Yeah. Chickens for KFC.
Right. Exactly.
Sorry, Steve, but just real quick, building on what you're saying there, Andrew, I did find the net neutrality reinvigoration disturbing, and it goes in concert with the new executive order that came out this week that I think I want to get your opinion on, too, because Biden putting an executive order out on artificial intelligence after putting Kamala in charge of artificial intelligence, who doesn't even have human intelligence of her own.
Right.
I'm a little concerned. And I've seen reports now they're talking about building these barges and putting them in international waters, like giant computing barges to manage AI and actually give them international sovereignty. And when I saw that, I was like, wait a minute, where's my tinfoil hat?
I know a guy who did environmental policy for the Bush administration that has been talking about sinking servers into the ocean under the guise of it's greener because the ocean can sink, you know, the ocean can keep it cool without the need. That's really gonna work. I will say this much real quick. I was reviewing essays today for an organization I do a lot of work with, student essay competition, college students around the country, and I had about 40 essays, and I had to pitch about half of them because it was really clear that all of the students had gone to ChatGPT to write the essays because they all had the exact same, you know, variations on the exact same verbiage in like at the structure, and I'm like, every time. And one of the first essay I'd read, I loved it. And then I read the next essay. I'm like, well, wait a minute. This is really similar to the first one that I just read. And then another one and another one. And I call the organizers. Says, yeah, we noticed that. Just throw them out and start all over again. So the ones that I didn't have that are the ones that I selected. This is where we are.
Oh my God. And you know, and it's getting exponentially quicker too, this technology. Right. So we're talking about it now. And I suspect in about 5 years, we're going to be saying, remember the good old days when all we had to worry about was ChatGPT? Because it's crazy. It is a scary thought, especially now that it's being used as statecraft by the likes of the CCP and whatnot with regards to what we were talking about with TikTok.
Right.
You think America is playing this game too on the other side of the coin? Are we doing this to other nations as well?
If we are, we're not doing it very well. And keep in mind that when the other nations do have their internet kill switches and they do go down the road of being able to monitor exactly what's being put out there, it becomes very difficult. Now, listen, in the past, it's funny because there was a really interesting debate amongst conservatives about what we were doing during the Cold War and the role of American propaganda. The reality is the freedom of ideas, freedom of commerce, these are very seductive and don't need to be manipulated by, you know, American propagandizing machines. They are very seductive in their own right. When people in the Soviet Union saw images of fully stocked American supermarkets, sure, some of them thought that it was pure propaganda, but others were like, you know something? I'm kind of intrigued by the fact that I can go to a supermarket and I can buy whatever. I can buy five different kinds of cheese.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Amazing. All right. Well, Andrew, we're just about out of time. I hear the music starting to bleed in here. Anything you want to throw out there? Any Friday message for us here at Today's News Talk?
Listen, I'm going to steal from my colleague, Jerry Rogers, the editor of Real Clear Policy here. Jerry always says when he signs off our show, find your truth, plant your feet, and stand firm. And I always add to that, have fun and stay safe. Stay safe, everybody. Have a happy Friday.
There you go.
Have a great weekend, Andrew. Thank you.
All right. Yeah. Have a great weekend, man. Okay. Well, it's been real and it's been real fun, Steve.
We'll do it all over again on Monday, brother.
That's right. Looking forward to it. And stay tuned for the Brian McClain Show coming up next right here on Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.